All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 46 degrees with mist and fog per my little application here in upstate New York. It's not too bad, kind of gray, but it sure does feel like spring, which makes me happy. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Humans with No Work and Free Money, Global Resource Monitoring. We talked about universal basic income again and how it's just going to be the land o' plenty after the robots and artificial intelligence take all the jobs in the next 5, 4, 5, 10, 20 years, depending on who you talk to. We ended up, though, looking at this new, which was pretty insane, this new satellite system. We have all these private companies now that are getting into satellite technology, and they are going to be launching them over the next year or two, and there's all kinds of them up there now, but they're able to scan the globe multiple times a day for real-time 50 trillion pixel images of Earth every single day. They were talking about how they could use this for resource monitoring, watching economic indicators. I've read some stuff in the past about them even watching the shipping lanes and seeing who's getting shipments and who isn't. Be able to tell what the health of an economy is based upon how many incoming and outgoing ships you have for import-exports. They were talking about watching Walmart parking lots to be able to gauge the current economic, political spending status. They were also talking about being able to watch aquifers and crops to see what the futures are going to look like. That's very frightening. We are talking about full-out global, to-the-minute, real-time resource monitoring in a world where there will be no jobs and we will be ruled by artificial intelligence maintaining our environment. And we'll be taking our nanobots and everybody will be healthy and the world will be great, right? Well, you know, good old Ray Kurzweil has been popping out of the woodwork again recently. A few different times he's shown up in the last month or so. And I'm going to see right now, I got this queued up. And I'm not hearing any sound, so maybe it's just me. I don't know. We will see. Wonder why all of a sudden there's no sound here. This always happens when we try to use YouTube. But is there any sound for me? Yeah, at least there's sound for me, but I am not hearing it from Skype. So you know what? Just give me one quick second, and we're going to try it again before I lose my train of thought. Do, 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 do. All right, hold on. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. All right, let's try it one more time. This call should already be here. Oh, look, it's not. How surprising. All right, maybe. Let's see. Let's see if we get the telltale hiss. Hey, we did. All right, so this one might actually work. So Ray Kurzweil, of course, Mr. Singularity, and he's working as the lead engineer on one of the artificial intelligence projects, Deep Brain, at Google. We're going to talk a little bit more about that today. But good old Ray Kurzweil showed up at a C-SPAN 2 in-depth show the other day. Actually, this was in August. But he did have an article on CNN the other day, and he was talking about AI revolt and rights of the machine. And we've talked about that before. I just wanted to play a little bit of this if it ever loads. And wow, it's just really giving me a hard time here now, because even though I got to transfer to the other computer, it doesn't want to load. So we're going to try one more thing, and then we might give up on Ray. Good old Ray, baby. Oh, wait, here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. Let's see if it'll happen. Here it comes. Well, it started. And it's frozen. Hold on, here it comes. I promise.
We have an emailer who asked, and he asked that, I embrace the progress of technology wholeheartedly, but at some point, don't we run the risk of technology becoming too human and realizing that they are modern slaves and face a possible revolt?
Well, he brings up an interesting issue regarding the legal rights of machines. But it's not.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm giving up completely on ever playing YouTube. All right. I need to hang this up because this ruins my show every single time I try. It's just so amazing how all of a sudden clips just don't work anymore here. Remember, it happened just one day and they just never came back. And I even increased my internet speed by tenfold and it still didn't come back. Everything's completely broken. Basically, Kurzweil was talking about the day when artificial intelligence realizes that it is now a living emotional entity, and basically our slave class, and will realize also that it has higher intelligence than us and that they should revolt against the humans that are holding them down. They're going to demand rights and they're going to demand superiority. Now, Ray had a story in CNN Money back March 8th. We read like the first two paragraphs of this the other day before the show ended. So I want to start here. Computers will overtake us when they learn to love, says Ray Kurzweil. And at the very end of that clip that we didn't get to hear, he actually mentioned the emotions, and that's the next big piece. Ray Kurzweil, the celebrated American inventor who keeps predicting the future with scary accuracy, says computers will match and possibly beat human intelligence by 2029. When I talk about computers reaching human intelligence levels, I am not talking about logical intelligence, says Kurzweil at an event in New York City this last week. It is being funny and expressing loving sentiment, he says. That is the cutting edge of human intelligence. The futurists spoke about AI and the future of technology with astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. And when Tyson pushed back and asked if computers will one day write a Nobel Prize-winning novel and supplant even that aspect of what it is to be human, Kurzweil said, he puts it differently. We are going to combine with that intelligence, says Ray. How? Well, cell-sized nanobots in our brains will connect us to the global internet and let us download our skills matrix style. And we talked about that not too long ago. There's a lot of nanotechnology that is rolling out right now for the cures for cancer and all these other things. And, of course, we've looked at brain implants. So this isn't too far in the future, trust me. He says, we will also edit our genes like computer codes to cure diseases, and we're seeing that happen every day. There's some new gene-edited disease that is cured in a living creature that they want to roll out, of course, with 21st Century Medicine, 21st Century Cures Act, to anyone who wants it without it being approved in humans so they can write a case study about you. CNN Money asks Kurzweil, well, what happens to inequality in this future? Will brain superpowers and health be limited to the rich? And of course, right, we've been talking about universal basic income, how it's one for all and all for one. Let's embrace the machine because it'll benefit everybody worldwide because, yes, we are such wonderful philanthropists. We want to save this world. And Kurzweil says, yes, like cell phones, only the rich have access to these technologies. And at a point in time when they don't work, industry perfects products for mass consumption, Kurzweil noted, and the tech will inevitably get cheaper. And as computers Keep doubling the number of chips on a circuit board. The price performance of information technology doubles every year. Nanobots will be available to everyone, he says. And these technologies are ultimately democratized because they keep getting less and less expensive. And even Kurzweil thinks that AI will probably replace many of today's workers. But he is optimistic about the future of jobs for humans. When Tyson pressed him to name specific jobs, Kurzweil was stumped about which jobs aren't going to be replaced. After all, no one in 1910 could predict today's computer chip designers and web developers. Kurzweil's best bet is that nanobots in our brain will create new bodily senses. Right now, music pleases our ears and fine dining stimulates our taste buds. We'll be creating art and rituals for other senses. And we've mentioned that before. I mean, he literally thinks it's going to be a world of people with no employment that are just tra-la-lying along, coming up with artistic pursuits and trying to philosophically discover what the cure to the plight of man would be. And I just don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think that that is possible. Anyway, it says, where does privacy fit into all of this? Tyson brought up Apple's current fight with the FBI, which could grant the government huge legal powers to search our personal devices by weakening data encryption. But Kurzweil told him not to worry. Encryption is outpacing decryption. So that, of course, gives us hope. And I see a picture of these two in New York City this week. Actually, it was March 7th. So it was a week ago, almost 10 days ago. And Kurzweil honestly looks like the clock has gone back another 10 years. Every time I see him, he looks younger. And I'm sure that he is practicing on himself with some of that longevity medicine. All right, we're going to give this one more shot. I closed my entire browser, and I have one thing open. So we're going to see if we can get this Kurzweil clip one more time.
We have an emailer who asked, and he asked that, I embrace the progress of technology wholeheartedly, but at some point, don't we run the risk of technology becoming too human and realize that they are modern slaves and face a possible revolt?
Well, he brings up an interesting issue regarding the legal rights of machines. And nobody worries about that much today. But it's not going to be a clear distinction between human and machine as we get to the 2030s and 2040s. In fact, even a biological human with an ordinary chorus will have their brains enhanced with non-biological intelligence. That non-biological component, a portion of our intelligence, will be far more capable than the biological portion. And so, you know, is that a machine? Is that a human? We'll have machines where there's no biological component, but they're very precise copies of biological people, and they're going to act in exactly the same way. It's going to be all mixed up. You're not going to be able to walk in the room and say, okay, humans on the left side of the room, machines on the right. It's going to be very much an integration of biological and non-biological intelligence, just as it is today, except that the non-biological portion is going to get a lot more capable. And ultimately, they're going to press for their own legal rights. And there's already a lot of interesting discussion about that. And, you know, I think that will happen, you know, particularly when you can have an entity that's completely non-biological, that's just convinced in terms of their complexity, their emotions as humans. And emotional intelligence is not some little sideshow to our intelligence. Because of the logical, analytical things we do, machines can already do a pretty good job of that. Very few mathematicians could hold up to, let's say, Mathematica. And recently, mathematical theorems have been done as a collaboration between the human mathematician and the machine. But emotion is actually the most complicated and sophisticated thing we do. But ultimately, we will understand that as well. And these future machines will have emotional intelligence.
One of the arguments or things you bring out in your books, the fact that the ability for a brain to be a synthetic body or a version 2 body, as you call it. What do you mean by that?
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to be merging with non-biological intelligence. We'll have nanobots go inside our bodies and brains, and ultimately we'll have billions of nanobots and other ways in which we're going to be in very direct touch with non-biological intelligence. So then my intelligence is a combination of both my biological intelligence, all the ion channels in my brain, and all of the biological machines. Now, the machine part of the intelligence, we can clearly download the contents of that easily. We do that all the time with our machines. Machines can share their knowledge, their states at electronic speeds, which is actually a million times faster than human brains can share knowledge. But ultimately, we'll be able to tap into the biological patterns as well. We'll be able to have these nanobots scan the state of our ion channels, neurotic concentrations, interneuronal patterns, and extract that information. But principally, I don't see that as the real quintessential scenario. I see us becoming essentially more and more non-biological, and that a non-biological intelligence can download knowledge and skills, as we saw in The Matrix. We do that all the time with our computers. I mean, we spent years training one research computer to understand human speech. We trained it like a child. We patiently corrected its errors. We posted thousands of hours of speech. Over years, better and better job, and finally it was commercially viable. Now, if you want your computer to understand human speech, you don't have to go through those years of training like we do have to do with every human child. You can just download the evolved patterns of this one research computer that learned its lessons. It's called learning the software. Machines can take their learning, their skills, and share them at electronic speeds, which is a million times faster than we can share our knowledge with language, although the fact that we can share it at all gives us a leg up on other species. So there you go.
So for a couple things. Hold on. There were a couple things here that he talked about. One, of course, is having the nanobots in our brain. We've talked about that so many times. I have another story on that as well from Kurzweil. That is coming, and that is the Google Life Science Division that's working on that, as a matter of fact. And, of course, they've sprinkled money all over the place with DARPA. DARPA's been working with different universities on this, and they have all these great cures for cancer. Remember, I told you the dangling carrot was going to be the cure for cancer, and people are already going to start lining up for this. This is the big new thing of the 21st century. You know, we couldn't cure it all these years with all these billions of dollars, and now we have these little self-replicating swimming robots that we can put into your blood that can fix anything and get into your brain. As a matter of fact, they can also connect you to the machine. They can read your thoughts. There was a new thing that I was just reading recently, and Kurzweil alluded to that in his interview, where they can connect. DARPA was working on their stenode, the combination stent with this diode that they could put up into an artery and get that direct into your brain where it can implant, and they can actually read single neurons now and know what you're thinking, be able to take those, and they are now working with trying to download and then upload. You know, one of the things when the video cut out for a brief second, the interviewer had been asking about downloading memories, and we looked at a few stories about that also. Just over the last week, there were two new ones, and one was about this new startup company that is working on just that. With cloud computing, one of the things that they want to do is to be able to download our essence. Right now, in the future, it'll be from birth, you will have something implanted in your brain that cognition, that's what it was called, augmented cognition, where it'll be recording your life from day one. So the day that you die, if you are a version 1.0 or beyond with these implants from day one of your life, it'll be very easy to digitize, upload to the cloud so you can see Nana after you're gone. And then, like I said, download Nana at Christmas time into her robotic avatar at the dinner table. And you'll never have to be without those that you lost. And if you really want to stay in an incarnation physical body, you'll have then in the future very human-like skin jobs, as they called them in Battlestar Galactica, which is a combination of biological and mechanical. And like Kurzweil said, it's going to come to the point where you're not going to be able to stand in a room and say biological entities on this side of the room and machine entities on the other, because they will be so intercombined. And I think it's already started happening. you know, some of the stuff that's going on in our environment and stuff that's being put in our food and stuff they're finding in our water and in the soil and all these metals and things, I don't think that these are an accident. I don't think that these are naturally occurring. I think that this is something that is being orchestrated very quietly in the background to correlate with these other things that are going on that are now coming out to the forefront about the development of artificial intelligence and robotics. Anyway, here's a story out of HuffPost. It surprised me. It was such a mainstream publication. Ray Kurzweil, in the 2030s, nanobots in our brain will make us godlike. Yeah, I've talked about that as well. This really is striving to be gods, to enslave biology with the synthetic, to create life in our own image. The lady from DARPA had even talked about that in that story we read back a few months ago in regards to terraforming Mars. She was talking about the synthetic biology project, the very large one that's going on. The Department of Energy is in charge of it. They had, I think it was in 2014, they had presented their synthetic biology update to Congress. So, I mean, it's a real thing. And the DARPA lady had talked about how at some point in the future, they hope that with these genome projects, not just of humans, but of all living things, because they are working on that. The insect one was just completed, and I know they're working on it for all the plants. She wants to be able to press a button, slice and dice, just like we're doing now with that CRISPR-Cas9 technology for human genes. Kurzweil even mentioned that. Just like computer code, we can now already manipulate genes and make them what we want. We've seen some of these stories about the hybrid human-animal things that they're working on and growing organs. MIT had a story about that. China has the huge clone and genetic modification factory. We have at UC Davis, I believe it was, and they have those genetically modified cows. China has the cows where they spliced in human breast milk genes. I mean, in Europe, in the UK, they just approved genetically modified embryos for experimentation. Of course, they can't grow beyond 7 days, but how long is that going to be, and how many back rooms is this happening in that the regulations aren't following? I mean, back when I first started doing radio in 2011, I had come across that story about 300 human-animal chimeras found in a lab in the UK. So this is not fantasy at all anymore. It is full steam ahead. Mad science gone mad. Marlon Brando in the Isle of Dr. Moreau, like beyond insanity. But it's happening in real time, and it's no longer in a petri dish at all. So anyway, back to the story. So we are creating this hybrid race in the vision of the eyes of the people who have dubbed themselves gods. That's pretty much what it's come down to. And I don't think, you know, it's all being done under the guise. We have a sheepskin wrapped around Ray Kurzweil going, look how fuzzy I am. Look at how cute I am. Bleep, bleep. But actually take off the covers, because this is a very evil agenda. This is going to give them the ability to manipulate, control, monitor, and delete you at will, at an atomic, at a cellular, at a nano level. There will be not one moment of privacy, and we will be but slaves to the ultimate machine. And one of these days, you know what always happens? These people full of pride. I studied a lot of this, a lot of philosophy in college. I got an English degree, remember? And my very last class I took was probably my hardest, and that was Milton, Paradise Lost. It was a whole semester reading the entire Paradise Lost, and it was all about the fall of man because of pride. And that's where we're at right now. It's prideful men thinking that they are gods, thinking that they can control, they can create and control something, and it's not going to turn out that way. You know, many of the great thinkers of our time, the tech giants, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, even, I don't want to admit it, but Bill Gates has been in it long enough, though he's the world's biggest eugenicist, but they've all come out, and the Apple guy, Wozniak, they've all come out and cautioned that, you know, we better be careful what we ask for. Elon Musk said it specifically, we are summoning the demon. We are giving machines intelligence. We read a couple stories the other day out of MIT Technology Review about this new project called Robot Brain, Robo Brain, I think it is, where they have been training, teaching, and training artificial intelligence not only to learn, but then to teach each other. We've also seen robots, small ones, that they have been working with that have learned to pass down beneficial traits to their offspring that they create themselves, causing an evolution in robotics. We've already set the dominoes spilling. And it's not going to be too long when we look at the law of exponential returns using technology to build more technology. It happens at a rate that, you know, we keep running across these stories I've been seeing for a very long time that, you know, they're like, oh, 20, 30, 100 years before we get there. But then we run across these stories with people in the know that every single one, they're like, well, it's happening a lot faster than we thought it would. Of course it is. Look at any chart. Or read anything about the law of exponential returns. Once you start using technology to create technology, the cat is out of the bag. And when you have 2 times 2 equals 4, and then 4 times 4 equals 16, and then 16 times 16 equals whatever, more than 144. I don't know. It's too early to be doing that math in my head. You know, it gets big really fast. Actually, I should have been doing 32s and 64s because of memory. I know that. Memory in a computer. But, you know, the thing is, we have unleashed this beast. It's already happening. We were reading those stories the other day about, from the MIT Technology Review, about them now having a repository for learning, for machines, for AI, and for robots. And so one machine learns something, and it goes to the cloud, and then it can distribute it out to every other machine that's connected to that cloud. It's kind of like utilizing Dropbox, if you've ever used a tool like Dropbox, and you get the desktop client. So I could be on my machine upstairs, I could be working on my file, I can upload it to my cloud account called Dropbox, and Dropbox then pushes that file out to the repository on all my other machines that have the desktop client installed. So I don't need to A, download that file, or B, go look for that file, or C, do any type of intervention, because all my other machines now has that new knowledge. Well, it's that on steroids. All right, let's get to this Huffington Post story. In 2030, nanobots in our brains will make us godlike, from Kurzweil. Futurist and inventor Ray Kurzweil predicts humans are going to develop emotions and characteristics of higher complexity as a result of connecting their brains to computers. We're going to be funnier, he says, ha ha, and sexier, just like him with his new youthful look and his Grecian formula in his hair. We're going to be better at expressing loving sentiment, Kurzweil said at a recent discussion at Singularity University. He is involved in developing artificial intelligence as a director of engineering at Google, but he was not, and they had to, of course, put this in here at the time, he was not speaking on behalf of the company. Evil laughter. Because we know that Google's ideas have infiltrated, merged, melded with Google's. There is definitely an evil agenda going on now in their life sciences and in their AI division. Kurzweil predicts that in the 2030s, human brains will be able to connect to the cloud, allowing us to send emails and photos directly to the brain and to back up our thoughts and memories. This will be possible, he says, via nanobots. Tiny little robots made from DNA strands swimming around in the capillaries of our brain. He sees the extension of our brains into a predominantly non-biological thinking as the next steps of evolution of humans, just as learning to use tools was for our ancestors. And this extension, he says, will enhance not just our logical intelligence, but also our emotional intelligence, We're going to add more levels to the hierarchy of the brain modules and create deeper levels of expression. Yes, we could sit around and be artistic all day as we collect our universal basic income. And to demonstrate, he gave us a hypothetical scenario with Google co-founder Larry Page. We talked about Larry yesterday. He says, so I'm walking along and I see Larry Page and I think, I better think of something clever to say. But my 300 million modules in my neocortex aren't going to cut it. I need a billion in 2 seconds, and I'm able to access that in the cloud. Right, because it's on demand. And just like I can multiply intelligence with my smartphone by thousandfolds today. In addition to making us cleverer in the hallways, connecting our brains to the internet will also make us more unique. Right now, we can have very similar architectures to our thinking, said Kurzweil, but when we can expand it without the limitations of a fixed enclosure, he pointed to his head, then we can actually become much more different. People will be able to very deeply explore some particular type of music in far greater degree than we can today. It'll lead to a far greater individuality, not less. Now, I'm going to argue with that because everything that I was reading about the uploading of learning and the downloading really sounded very Borg-like to me, swarm thinking, where we all have access to the same approved data repository. So I don't see, you know, Kurzweil's looking at this like we're going to be able to download apps in an app store, and maybe that's the case right now as we are hybrid biological, technological entities. But in the day, when they finally are using clone factories, there is no more natural reproduction, because you know that's coming as well. And we get our implant at birth, or maybe it's even engineered into them at birth, before birth, in the zygote, before they are grown in a dish or in some sort of pod, growing pod room. Those creatures, I don't even know what to call them, the new human that is no longer human will not have individuality, I don't believe. I think it's going to be like a basic download. Like when you get a brand new computer, you're going to have Windows installed and your 8 approved applications. And the only way that you're going to be able to get individualized thought is to become a hacker, to be able to hack your own brain and download some of those Tor-like underground dark web applications for the brain that'll give you the ability to stand up against the machine. I do not agree with Kurzweil that you're going to have more individuality. Anyway, to continue, it says, this is in stark contrast to a common perception often portrayed in science fiction that cyborg technologies make us more robotic, less emotional, and less human. Yeah, because that's what's going to happen. Kurzweil is just like a lunatic. He's trying to sell you the package to open your arms. It's going to be so utopic, so wonderful. It's not going to be that way. It's just not. Cyber technologies make us more robotic, less emotional, and less human. The concern is expressed by Dr. Miguel Nicolas, head of neuroengineering at Duke University, who fears that if we rely too much on machines, we'll lose our diversity in human behavior because computers operate in black and white, ones and zeros, without diversion. But Kurzweil still believes that being connected to computers will make us more human, more unique, and even godlike. He says, quote, evolution creates structures and patterns that over time are more complicated, more knowledgeable, more creative, and more capable of expressing higher sentiments like being loving, he said. It is moving in the direction of qualities that God is described as having without limit. Like this guy literally is reaching for godlike status. That should be red alarm bells everywhere. So he says, as we evolve, we come closer to God. Yeah, it's so great. We can even upload ourselves to the cloud, to heaven, and be living forever. Evolution is a spiritual process, he says, and there's beauty and love and creativity and intelligence in the world, and it all comes from the neocortex. So we are going to expand the brain's neocortex and become more godlike. But will brain nanobots actually move out of science fiction and into reality, or are they doomed to the fate of flying cars? And you know, since this story came out, they already have been testing flying cars. I don't think any of this is fantasy anymore. Like Kurzweil, Nicholas Neo Grapante, founder of the MIT Media Labs, also thinks that nanobots in our brains could be the future of learning, allowing us, for example, to load the French language into the bloodstream of our brains. James Friend, a professor of mechanical engineering at UC San Diego, focused on medical nanotechnology and thinks that we are only 2 to 5 years away from being able to effectively use brain nanobots. There you go, like I said. And in his example, they'll be used to prevent epileptic seizures. And see, they're already doing brain implants for Parkinson's, epilepsy, and things of that nature. They got that stenoed. I don't think that it's going to be too much time, if not already, where they've been doing some testing on this. However, that pesky FDA and getting that FDA approval would likely be very difficult, friends said. And guess what? Well, with that 21st Century Cures Act, it won't be, because they'll be considered life-saving. Life-saving, so we could circumvent any laws, any safety testing, get it out there in the hands of the people who have no other choice, dead and dying, to be the guinea pigs to test the technology and then write a case study about it to show how wonderful it is so more will line up to become more godlike. This is just sick. It's sick. It is the ultimate deception, people. We are being deceived by the dangling carrot of our vanity. To become more godlike and live forever, all you got to do is get the nanobots, get the implant, become a part of the machine, and you can have it all. Don't fall for it. You know what? Nature is a beautiful thing. Biology is a beautiful thing. The cycles of nature are a beautiful thing. And part of the cycles of nature include birth, aging, and death. Okay? It's the way nature works. It's a cycle. And we go back into the ground and we fertilize the next generation. That's how it works. To think that we're going to rise above that and become masters of this beautiful thing that we call planet Earth and the biological life that's existed here for millions of years, that has evolved slowly, beautifully, with something that almost seems like there has been intelligence behind it because of all the mathematics that seem to work out. For us to think that we're going to not only capture, restrain, and improve upon that is quite prideful. And we're going to have the mass fall of man happening here very shortly as we move down this path. I see it coming. Anyway, getting approval from the FDA. Yes, the pesky FDA that stands in the way of you getting your nanobot cures would likely be very difficult, says James Friend, professor of mechanical engineering at San Diego University, focusing on medical nanotechnology. He thinks approval would take anywhere from a few years to never happening because of people being concerned about swimming mysterious things into your head and leaving them there. And yeah, we saw not too long ago that they had these new swimming nanobots that they made in the shape of these little nano-sized fish with a tail and fins, and they can wiggle. And they can get to where they need to go pretty easily in the bloodstream. Other scientists are skeptical that brain nanobots will be safe and effective anytime soon or at all. Largely due, and this is what I've said so many times, and this isn't just nanotech. This is genetics and all this other mad science we're playing with. That due to largely how little we currently know or understand, not only about the brain, but about how biology and genetics works and interacts. One such scientist, David Linden, very interesting that he's a professor of neuroscience at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and that is the place where we discovered has the world's largest child brain database on file. Dr. Linden says he thinks that the timing of Kurzweil's estimation that nanobots will be in our brain by the 2030s is premature. Linden says that there are huge obstacles, such as adding a nanobot power source, which we read a few stories about that as well. Some of those new nanobots they were developing were actually using fats or proteins from the human body as a power source, and we had done a flashback back to when we heard an interview with Eric Drexler, the father of nanotechnology out of MIT, and one of the laws, one of the absolute laws with nanotechnology is that the nanotech could not, he said, utilize a power source from its host because it could get out of control and consume the host. So the fact that they've already been tinkering with nanobots using parts of the human body as their power source is already red alarm bells. But anyway, this doctor or professor David Linden from Johns Hopkins University says there's huge obstacles such as adding a nanobot power source, evading cells that attack foreign bodies, and avoiding hampering the proteins and sugars in the tiny spaces between the brain cells. Now, I can tell you they've already gotten around evading cells that attack foreign bodies by making synthetic particles that mimic things within the human body and then loading them with a nanotechnology payload so they're almost hidden like a Trojan horse before they then allow them to burrow into, I believe it was the cytoplasm of the cell, and then release the payload that then gets replicated in the cell itself and then replicated throughout the body. It's very insidious the way that they have found a way to circumvent the immune system to get these into you. I'm telling you guys, this is bad, 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 bad news, and it is beyond anywhere already that we ever imagined. I'm going to scroll up here. I think this story is from 2013, maybe. Oh, this was from 2015. So just from October, 6 months ago or so. But I still think they're wrong. I mean, we've already read stories where they've gotten around a lot of these obstacles. Although the science is far from applications in brains, nanotechnology has long been heralded as a potential game changer in medicine. And the research is advancing. Last year, researchers injected into living cockroaches, and I've alluded to this before, DNA nanobots that were able to follow specific instructions, such as dispensing drugs. And this year, 2015, nanobots were injected into the stomach lining of mice. Remember, the stomach is one of those places where they can easily cross that blood-brain barrier. We are learning to enhance our brains, he says, albeit not with nanobots yet. The researchers have already successfully sent a message, and we did this story back last year, from one human brain to another. This was over the internet, no less. By stimulating the brains from outside using electromagnetic induction. In another study, similar brain stimulation made people learn math faster. We just did a story last week or the week before about them using those EEGs or ECGs on the brain. EEGs, I think. No, ECG. I don't remember which one it was. Whatever. It's that little hat with all little electrodes on it where they plugged in a whole bunch of people. They had been scanning the brains of airline pilots, seasoned airline pilots. Scan their brain waves, stored them, and then put those caps onto non-pilots and played back the recordings of the brain waves of the pilots to help the non-pilots learn to fly a plane faster. And there was some success in that. And they are thinking that being able to download learning in the future isn't going to be too much longer. And this article says, in a recent U.S. government study, a few dozen people who were given brain implants, yes, live on TV, National Geographic for Parkinson's, that delivered targeted electroshocks to the brain scored better on memory tests. So I guess DARPA must have been doing memory electro brain implant shock therapy as well. Oh, my goodness. And while we are already implanting thousands of humans with brain chips, such as Parkinson's patients, ding, ding, who have a brain chip that enables better motor control, which, of course, they use dopamine stimulation within the brain because dopamine fixes Parkinson's. It's all part of the Super Soldier Project as well. As well as deaf people who have cochlear implants, which enable hearing. But when it comes to enhancing brains without disabilities and for non-medical purposes, ethical and safety concerns arise. And, you know, I'm sure that they are just so concerned about the ethics and the medical safety. Not. According to a survey last year, 72% of Americans are not interested in a brain implant. Well, few that could improve their memory or mental capacity. Yet some believe enhancement of healthy brains is inevitable, including Christoph Cook, a science officer at the Allen Institute of Brain Science, which Allen is the, I don't remember his first name. Richard, maybe. No, I don't remember his first name. Allen. That's the guy that was the co-founder of Microsoft with good old Bill Gates. He also has a Longevity Institute. As well as Gary Marcus, professor of psychology at New York University. They use the analogy of breast implants. Breast surgery was developed for post-mastectomy reconstruction and correcting of congenital defects, but has since become popular for breast augmentation. Brain implants could follow the same path, they say. Here are Kurzweil's answers to a couple of the questions he took at the Singularity University discussion. Says, you predicted that in 2029, we will reach the singularity, the point at which artificial intelligence outpaces human intelligence. And your opening remarks suggest that you are fundamentally positive about AI in the post-2029 world. Other speakers have been a little more ambivalent, certainly regarding the future of employment. Ding, ding, ding. Would you elaborate on your overall sentiment of the post-2029 world, Mr. Kurzweil? He says, I've actually written about the dangers of AI more than most, but I am also optimistic, having looked at the positive impact that technology has had on human life. Yeah, it's gotten us addicted to the dangling carrot devices, so nobody's paying attention to what's going on in the real physical world, so I don't know how much of a positive long-term impact that is for humanity. And when it comes to the existential threat of AI, he says, the primary strategy comes from governance and social systems. We will have conflict between different groups of humans, each enhanced by AI, and of course then the Luddites like you and me. And we will have that today humans using intelligent weapons, the best tool that we have to combat that is to continue our work on our democracy, our liberty, and our respect for each other. I mean, give me a break, Kurzweil. And when it comes to the potential unemployment caused by AI, it has always been the case that we can clearly see that jobs are going away. This started 200 years ago in the textile industry in England, and the weavers who had enjoyed a business model passed down for centuries were suddenly losing their jobs to machines that could spin thread or weave cloth. You could look at almost every job and it would not be long before it's being automated. And the reality is that employment went up and prosperity went up, and the common man or woman, rather than having just one shirt, now could have a whole wardrobe, and life became better. And there were actually more jobs. So let's sell it that way. I mean, I think the world is just becoming such a different place now. I mean, it's just too small. We don't know how to trade. There is no more raw material. And especially, and I wanted to get to this A2P, Atoms to Product, project that DARPA is working on, using nanotechnology, nanofactories to build products. And if I were a futurist in 1900, he said, About 40% of you work on farms and a third in factories, and I predict by the year 2012, only about 2% of us will work on farms and 9% in factories. Everyone would go, oh my God, we're going to all be out of work. And I'd say, don't worry, you're going to get new jobs creating apps, websites, chip design, data analysis, and nobody would have any idea what I'm talking about. We're destroying jobs at the bottom of the skills ladder and creating new jobs at the top. We've invested more in education in the U.S. over the last century, and we've increased per capita in K-12 education significantly. We've had 50,000 college students in 1870, and we have 20 million today, he says. It is a difficult political situation because people can see the jobs are going away, and yes, that is painful. You say, but, there will be new jobs, right? And people say, what new jobs? And you say, well, I don't know. They haven't been invented yet. It's kind of a weak argument, but it's true, he says. Trust me. I'm cursed. Well, it's true. We're also creating jobs that move up Maslow's hierarchy so we can spend more time doing things that give us gratification. People a century ago, for the most part, yes, had morals, which we don't today. For the most part, we're happy. They could have a job and provide for their family. And today, to look at an increasing degree, people are getting gratification from what they're doing. They look for a career that meets their passion, and lots of people are pursuing entrepreneurial ideas. We have 20 million college students. Yes, they can't get a fucking job. And an equal amount of people who teach them and support that infrastructure all to think about knowledge and to organize knowledge. That's not something that people spent much time doing a century or two ago, and we're going to keep moving in that direction. And most things are becoming information technology. Like I said, tech is invading everything like a plague, including clothing, which will be printed on 3D printers. And we also discussed are going to be smart using IBM's Watson. And Google also has a deal going with Levi's, so don't worry about that. Wearables are coming. We'll also be able to grow food and vertical agriculture, yes, and we have all kinds of agricultural robots that are coming as well. Smart farms, they call them. And then we can print it on 3D printers, which are pennies for the pound. In the 2020s, 3D printed designs will be open source, so you can live extremely well and print out everything you need, including printing out your houses. People say, well, great, there goes all the industries like fashion and construction. But look at all the industries that have already gone from physical products to the digital product, like movies and music and books. There's an open source market with millions of free products. But people still spend money to read Harry Potter and see the latest blockbuster and buy music from their favorite artist. Fueled by the ease of distribution and promotion, you have coexistence of a free open source market and a proprietary market, and that is the direction in which we are moving. I can't actually describe what new jobs will be, but they will be more gratifying, he says. We're already redefining the nature of work. I don't feel like I'm working when I go to Google because I do what I'm passionate about, he says. And a lot of people don't like their jobs today. So why are these people so upset if they go away? We've created a society where you need a job to have a livelihood, but that's going to be redefined. We are going to have the means of providing an extremely high standard of living to everyone easily within 10 to 15 years. So I think where we need to go from here, I think I'm going to save all the nanobody stories and the AI stuff and all this deep learning that's happening and an insight into some of the stuff that Kurzweil is doing at Google for tomorrow. We're going to end the last 3 minutes of the show going back to something that we read 6, 8, 10 months ago. Bill Joy from the year 2000, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, out of Wired Magazine. Why the Future Doesn't Need Us by Bill Joy. Our most powerful 21st century technologies, robotics, genetic engineering, and nanotech, are threatening to make humans an endangered species. From the moment I became involved in the creation of new technologies, their ethical dimensions have concerned me, he says, but it was only in the autumn of 1998 that I became anxiously aware of how great the dangers are that are facing us in the 21st century. I can set the date of the onset of my unease to the day I met Ray Kurzweil. One of the unholy trinity, I'm going to say, Google DARPA Kurzweil. The deservedly famous inventor of the first reading machine for the blind and many other amazing things. Ray and I were both speaking at George Gilder's telecom conference, and I encountered him by chance in the bar of the hotel after both of our sessions were over. I was sitting with John Searle, a Berkeley philosopher who studies consciousness, and while we were talking, Ray approached and a conversation began, the subject of which haunts me to this day. I had missed Ray's talk and the subsequent panel that Ray and John had been on, and they now picked right up where they'd left off, with Ray saying that the rate of improvement of technology was going to accelerate and that we were going to become robots or fuse with robots or something like that, and John countering that this could not happen because the robots could not be conscious. While I had heard such talk before, I had always felt sentiment that robots were the realm of science fiction. But now, from someone I respected, I was hearing a strong argument that they were a near-term possibility. I was taken aback, especially by Ray's proven ability to imagine and create the future. And I mean, they gave him, we found out, they gave him an unlimited budget, he said, when he got hired at Google, to do what he does best. And that is come up with mad science gone mad. Google and DARPA gave him the machine. I already knew that new technologies like genetic engineering and nanotechnology were giving us the power to remake the world, but a realistic and imminent scenario for intelligent robots surprised me. It's easy to get jaded about such breakthroughs. We hear in the news almost every day some kind of technological or scientific advance, yet this was no ordinary prediction. In the hotel bar, Ray gave me a partial preprint of his then forthcoming book called The Age of Spiritual Machines, which outlines the utopia he foresaw, one in which humans gain near immortality by becoming one with robotic technology. And on reading it, my sense of unease only intensified. I felt sure that he had to be understanding of the dangers, understating the probability of bad outcomes along this path. All right, guys, we've got about 10 seconds. It is Wednesday, so make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. Josh live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The boys from New York at 8, 9 o'clock. Brand new Liam Chef Show. And at 11, Antimedio and Nick and DB. I will catch up with you guys tomorrow. Have an awesome Wednesday. See you.